a tenant needs more than just a space to sit for 8 hours a day now. Like, they need services at their fingertips because they've been conditioned to do so through, you know, a lot of the convenience apps like a DoorDash for ordering food. And so buildings need to keep up. They need to be able to offer something to the tenant that's more interesting.
Hi, I'm Vivek Kartha, and welcome to Deconstructed. Every episode, we're discussing the future of the world's largest asset class, real estate, through the eyes of the people who live and breathe it. Thank you for joining us, and let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com.
Hi, everyone. We're here today with Eric Roseman, Vice President of Technology and Innovation at Lincoln Property Company. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Vivek. Good to be with you.
All right, let's jump right in. The last year has been a crazy one for technology adoption, prop tech, the commercial real estate industry in general. But let's get to some of the new owners and operators of real estate. How do you see this kind of wave of technology changing the way new entrants compete?
This whole past year, I feel like it gave a lot of people an opportunity to sit at home and think about what's the next iteration of real estate and how do I come in? So it felt like a lot of people who were considering taking the jump into an entrepreneurial path, this became the push to get them to take that leap. And I think many of them saw the rise in technology, both the company performance of technology businesses, as well as the way people were actually utilizing the solutions to grow their businesses. If you think about, okay, COVID gave an opportunity for people to kind of step back and think about what's important. It gave an opportunity for people to sort of stop and kind of strategize so everyone's not so reactive. And then you layer on this, you know, the technology evolution that we've seen. And I think these new entrants, these really smart entrepreneurs are taking advantage of data analytics platforms and new technologies to build future investment businesses and future operators. And they're saying, hey, look at some of the old school ways of things being done. We can reinvent this. And so I think 2020, 2021, and the next couple of years is really about to be the launch pad of, you know, the next Blackstone or the next, you know, big investment manager. I think you're going to see, we're going to be really, really surprised who comes out of this because of their use of technology to accelerate their growth.
So let's make that a little bit more real. So maybe share a little bit about what one of these new investment managers or operators look like. Is that one real estate guy or gal and a data scientist that start up a shop? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think the formation of a lot of these technology companies where you have sort of a business head coupled with a CTO is all you need to go raise money. I think the new evolution of a real estate investment manager is a really charismatic and experienced veteran real estate professional coupled with someone who is proficient on the data side or product side or a technical background and says, hey, I see an advantage. So to make it more realistic, right, take someone who spins out of a blue chip investment manager, whether it's a Blackstone or a Prologis. They say, I see an opportunity in the market to buy, you know, fringe last mile industrial that has some solar capabilities that aren't being utilized. And they're building a data platform to source those opportunities and create a funnel system so that the best opportunities match their scoring system. And then they can go out and actually, you know, go write offers on those deals. And I think that is totally juxtaposed from the traditional way of large investment managers and the way they do things, which is broker deals, kind of waiting for opportunities to hit the market and kind of the more, you know, the highly competitive opportunities. So I think you'll see two-person teams, three-person teams, you know, a dozen people building the next multi-billion dollar investment manager on the backs of a data infrastructure that a traditional incumbent doesn't have.
Does that same dynamic or new breed of firm exist for service providers, property managers, operators of real estate beyond the investor?
Yeah, it does. It does exist today, and it's going to exist, you know, tomorrow. And I'll give you a good example. People don't always realize their competitors are the ones that come into a market with a different wedge, right? So if you think about co-living, you think about Common and Star City, these groups that seemingly a residential property manager would have never considered their competitor because they were going after a different wedge in the market. But they go into the market with this tech-first approach. And then what they do is they end up moving upstream into the traditional business of a property manager. And before you know it, they've built their business on the backs of technology doing co-living. And then over time, they become a residential property manager. So I think that's what happens is you see the curve of, you know, people cooperate until they start competing. And it's generally because they don't look like a competitor at first until the last moment when you realize, oh my gosh, they moved from co-working to office property management, you know, in the examples of some of the flex providers. That's how I think about it.
Well, let's talk about the other side of that. So if I'm a really large, successful investment manager, operator, you know, you work at Lincoln Property Company, for example, and I'm looking at this wave coming and I buy it, but it's also not natively the way we operate. Talk to the audience a little bit about the change management process. And then I want to go into a little bit about how you and your team influence that.
Yeah, well, for one, I think the industry has learned to adopt and recognizes these as threats. I don't think everyone's blind to the fact that your competitors don't always look like a competitor. And one signal of that is I think over the last decade, we've seen hires being made at a lot of the large institutions, whether it's a Blackstone, Prologis, or you're an operator like Lincoln or CBRE or JLL, to hire folks like myself who entirely focus on what's going to happen in our industry the next 5-10 years, right? Like we are tasked with living in the future and then relaying and translating that back to the day-to-day pragmatism. And so, you know, the wrong way to approach that would be to go to an operator and say, you know, you're blind. You don't see what's coming. Like, look at these new entrants. They're going to come and steal your lunch. That's the wrong way to put it. The right way to do it is say, you know, let's flag this company, really strong founder, going to be able to attract capital and talent, and likely going to be someone that we should know about and maybe cooperate today. But let's not be totally ignorant to their ability to evolve and become potentially competitors. But it's having someone or having people on the team who are willing to make the effort to get to know these groups, recognize where they exist in the ecosystem, and then be adaptable enough to say, hey, we see how they're changing. Let's make sure we're adopting the technologies and we're structuring ourselves appropriately to compete or, you know, hold our position. And a good example of that was like around Flex Office, where you saw a lot of the operators say, let's start our own, you know, Flex operating platform. A number of them either started their own or they partnered with them to create like a white labeled version so that some of the new entrants couldn't come in and just totally make them obsolete. I would say in the way you actually handle management, day-to-day management, you know, you see some of these groups who've built amazing technology stacks where it feels seamless, like, you know, ordering on DoorDash if you want, you know, the air conditioner to, you know, to lower the air. I think for an incumbent or, you know, a longstanding reputable operator like a Lincoln Property Company, it's just making sure that you're not ignorant to the change and making sure you're adopting the best technologies and then forming real relationships with them, not just becoming a customer and saying, oh, well, great, we're a customer, but actually having someone or teams tasked with, you know, being on their product advisory board, staying close to them, you know, piloting the new features, all those things that are critical for actually becoming a good user versus just being a everyday customer.
So someone that is hired for that thing to help see into the future, build these relationships, I'm curious how you think about that 5 to 10 years in the future and what you see that's exciting and the way you think that space is going. A story I'll share is I talked to one of your, I suppose, competitors, someone at JLL the other day, and he said there are over 2,500 quote unquote prop tech companies operating in the US. And navigating that field, understanding where things are going and what's going to help is a hard challenge. There's a lot of noise out there. Just share a little bit about how you're cutting through all of that volume and where you're personally making your maybe intellectual bets.
It's a really crowded space. It's a highly attractive industry to try to disrupt. And it's only getting more crowded as really successful companies like CoStar, I would put, you know, WeWork, Airbnb, all these groups have had successful runs. The people that help build those companies are going to be leaving at some point. And what's the next industry they're going to try to tackle? The one they already know. So you're going to see experienced entrepreneurs and team members starting the next versions of these companies because they would just, you know, saw the success. And I think that it's too much for one person or a small group of people to stay attuned to. You're never going to be able to see every company in the field. All you can do is build the right allies and build a peer set that you can say, hey, what's, you know, you can go to in confidence and say, hey, who are the three best companies in identity verification, right? There's 1,000 identity verification for renters and for, you know, for all kinds of things. So you have to have a good peer set where you can go to them and say, who should I be looking at or who should I be following? And if you're not tasked with that, like myself, plenty of executives at operators have, you know, hired consulting firms or have venture capital firms like a Fifth Wall who act as that third party advisory. And I think having those relationships is critical in your organization.
Let's take it back to the current state and get a little bit more practical. I know you shared with me some ideas on what the tech stack or the essential tech stack should look like for an operator. Can you share a little bit about your thoughts on what those different segments look like?
Sure. Yeah. So at the bedrock, right, you have an accounting system where, you know, you need to know where the cash is. You need to be able to file your taxes. I would put that in the back office realm, but it's highly critical from a foundation standpoint. You know, as an operator and a day-to-day operator, you're either managing a stable asset, managing an asset in flux, or you're doing a redevelopment or new development. So you have the tool necessary to manage that day-to-day, and then you have the tool necessary to manage a project. I would say being consistent in both of those is really important. So making sure you have the one platform that you use to manage all of your assets, as well as the one platform you use to manage all your projects is important. Why? Because the data you're collecting on building operations and the data you're collecting on project management, like hard costs, soft costs, time to complete project, is important to be able to look across projects. And so with property management, you're managing a stable asset or managing an asset that has maybe some minor things in flux, we use Workspace because it's, you know, we did the evaluation. We thought it was the best product in the market for LPC West. And ultimately, I call it like the power tool. It's the power tool that your property manager needs every single day to do the tasks that, you know, that fall in their court of responsibility, right? Making sure that they're collecting the rent, making sure that they handle any requests from tenants, making sure they have a log of who's coming in and out of the building, being able to find and source vendors, making sure, you know, they're approved from an insurance perspective and then being able to pay them. All those things are critical. And then on the project management side, you have project managers who are getting bids all the time from contractors. You have invoices to pay. You have, you know, budgets to write and to keep updated. Some of the things that maybe are more, call it end user or customer facing, I would say having a building app, right, or a tenant engagement experience is pretty critical for buildings of size, because a tenant needs more than just a space to sit for 8 hours a day now. Like, they need services at their fingertips because they've been conditioned to do so through, you know, a lot of the convenience apps like a DoorDash for ordering food. And so buildings need to keep up. They need to be able to offer something to the tenant that's more interesting. So we're seeing that space as critical for building management. And then I would say the last thing that's important is having a vision or having some kind of approach to ESG, right, and environmental. So how you actually handle energy consumption at your project, how you report your water usage, how you source renewable energies instead of, you know, whatever the default the utility is providing to your tenants, all those things and being an active operator definitely go into the tech stack. And what separates sort of your average operator from a strong operator. So that's four, maybe that's five. And there's some sort of peripheral things, I think, depending on the project, you would add.
Yeah, I'll take a quick aside. It's a naive question, but I think one that might be interesting to folks. There's a lot of maybe skepticism and excitement about this tenant experience category. So if I, you know, outside of the real estate, if I hear I'm going to an office building and they've got tenant experience technology, the first thing that comes to my mind is, I don't really want to interact a lot with the landlords or the people in the building. I just want stuff when I need it. Yes, I want to be able to control my air conditioning. I would love to be able to pay less in energy depending on the lease structure. It's cool if I can get dry cleaning picked up when I need it. But take me beyond that. What's the future vision of this whole tenant experience category?
At first, I was skeptical about, you know, how much does it really change the perception of an asset? Like, does it add that much value? And I was quickly corrected by someone who said, like, okay, maybe it doesn't radically change the experience on site, but from on a pound for pound basis or a dollar for dollar basis, like, we're not talking a massive investment to make a pretty significant incremental experience, right? If you go to one building and they don't have it, and then you go to the next, and it's like, hey, order your dry cleaning, order food, I can, you know, see a train schedule that's running by. I mean, all these things, they start to add up. Each individual module might not add a crazy amount of value, but when put together, it does add value. And so I was pleasantly corrected when I reframed my thinking to say, oh, wow, for only like a $25,000 investment, like, I can have a cooler experience. Yeah, that's probably going to touch the life of a number of the 2,000 employees that come through this building on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, I want to book my conference room. Yes, I want to see that my food's downstairs. Yes, I want to put a visitor in the system that's coming. Yes, I want to see what the, you know, food of the week is. All these things add up. And I think it does make for an interesting experience. And yoga classes, community things, like, it really is dependent on the content and the implementations that are put into the experience.
Yeah, consider me slightly corrected. The last sort of question I've got on this topic in general is on the adoption side. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is new, it's untested, everyone wants to see ROI, owners have budgets, operators have budgets. How do you get people comfortable with trying out some of this new stuff?
Yeah, it's a big challenge. Here's the wrong way to do it. I feel like the wrong way to do it is going to people in the organization and saying, you know, we need to change. We need to change. Like, we're always so slow to adopt, or like, you know, and really leaning into this whole like real estate's an archaic dinosaur industry. Like, that doesn't help anyone. Because at the end of the day, the people in the organization, they have a job to do. Like, they have a role that is sort of specific to them to do. If they're not paid and they're not incentivized to like be this broad experimentation petri dish. They're just not. And if I were in their position, I wouldn't either, right? So it's really important to remember the role that they do. And while the overarching message to the organization is like, we're forward thinking, we want to try things, fail fast, like, there's no, you know, downside to, you know, to trying these things, like, we're a supportive organization. But it's really then appealing to their pragmatic side of saying like, okay, what's your job? Like, what's the one thing you need to do every single day? Can I make you 10% more efficient with this one thing? If so, like, trust me that I will be your endorser. And if it doesn't go well, I'm going to take the blame. Like, I'm going to be the one that takes the responsibility. Like, you were courageous enough to give me the opportunity to try something new, but it's on me. I'm the first one to blame if it doesn't go well. And I think that's really important, because a lot of organizations just sort of push their people to say, well, try this untested thing, knowing that it's their head on the chopping block if it doesn't work. And that's just not a fair way to, I think, run an innovative platform. You have to be willing to take the flak personally if you're going to be the endorser of something new.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do, but I think the humble approach, you know, change is hard, is a lesson of humanity. I think that's right. Last question for you, Eric. You know, you are sitting at the prow of the boat looking into the future, spend a lot of time with tech companies, founders. You also spend a lot of time with owners and operators. If you were giving advice to younger people entering this industry, let's say in the kind of core commercial real estate industry, what advice would you give them to build exciting, rewarding careers over the next 20 or 30 years?
On the core commercial side?
Just on commercial real estate, I want to be an office investor or operator, industrial investor operator. I'm not going to go into the VC or the tech route, but I know that this market is going to be disrupted by tech. What should I be thinking about practicing? What's good advice for that person?
There's a lot of talking heads in this industry. And I, you know, for one, I spend a lot of time talking about this stuff. And there's a lot of thought leadership and there's a lot of proselytizing. And I don't think there's enough getting your hands dirty, boots on the ground. Like we all talk about, you know, your customer is your tenant. You know, why aren't we treating our customer like the way Amazon treats their customer? So my approach or my advice to someone new is like, go tour buildings. Go actually be in the spaces that you invest in more than you're not. And go, I mean, I'm just making this up, go start a blog series or a podcast of like tenants in your building. Go sit in that lobby and talk to people in your building and then publish the results. I mean, like if you really want to understand the end user and the asset type you're buying, you need to really understand the tenant, not just the tenant's balance sheet and their credit rating and, you know, their corporate guarantee that most people will look at when they're, you know, investing in real estate, but like go actually spend time at the asset. Go talk to the truck drivers that are actually parking and have to, you know, spin the 72 wheelers around or whatever, the 16 wheelers. Like, I just don't think enough people do that. People will tour buildings, you know, in diligence, right? They want to make sure they understand what they're buying, but they don't spend a lot of time talking to their tenants. I know one asset we bought in Culver City, we ended up meeting with one of the largest tenants and spent like 2 hours with them. And it was just eye-opening to hear their experience and what they liked and what they didn't like. And, you know, that's typical to do tenant interviews, but I think just getting out there more as a young person in commercial real estate into your assets, you'll learn a lot just by being on site.
Yeah, that's great advice for really any business. Get closer to the user, get closer to the customer. You learn a lot along the way. Well, thanks, Eric. Appreciate the time.
Vivek, always good to see you.
Take care.
All right.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening. And as always, a very special thank you to our guests. We'll be back soon, so please subscribe to Deconstructed on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. More details can be found at www.goworkspace.com/podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com.